Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners. Hello again and welcome back. It's time for the program that helps you learn and improve your American English skills. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. It's nice to have you with us today. If you are a regular listener of this broadcast or podcast, you know that we always present interesting stories to you in ways that are easy to understand, especially if English is not your first language. We speak more slowly than normal, and we use a limited vocabulary. That means we use words that are easy to understand. The best way to use As It Is as a learning tool is to record the program, either off the radio or from our website, and listen to it again and again. Be sure to practice saying the words the way we do, and soon you will be speaking English the American way. Okay, let's get started. Today we have two stories for you. The first one combines science and entertainment. For that one, we will go under the sea for some amazing pictures. Then, a little later, we'll have some interesting information about American law and economics and how it affects the pay for many working women in the United States. If you're ready, it's time to listen and learn. Jean-Michel Cousteau has spent a lifetime exploring the seas, like his famous father, the ocean explorer and filmmaker Jacques Cousteau. Now, Jean-Michel Cousteau has produced a 40-minute-long documentary from 100 hours of underwater videos. He and his crew used special equipment, including an IMAX camera, to take pictures of the smallest life in the sea. As we hear from Jonathan Evans, the camera produces high-resolution images that are sharp and like those seen in movies.
The technology enabled the crew to record microscopic underwater animals in slow motion in a 3D or three-dimensional film. Mr. Cousteau documented 30 new species in the movie called Secret Ocean 3D. Many of these creatures are much too small to be seen with human eyes.
When you're filming it, you bring it back up to the boat where we are, and we have a 3D screen, and we can see it with glasses on. You can see something we have never seen before. And sometimes we said, okay, we need to go back.
The results are extraordinary. The new film presents us with a beautiful but often deadly world. It shows how even tiny creatures are part of a complex food chain that sustains human life. Here, natural resources are never wasted. But as Mr. Cousteau warns, pollutants from human activity, such as chemicals, heavy metals, and plastic, threaten to destroy this life.
All the way up to the fish we catch and put in our plates. We're bringing back on land a lot of that pollution.
Jean-Michel Cousteau is a supporter of desalting ocean water to create clean water for humans to drink and to water crops. But he says that a major desalination effort can only happen if we stop the pollution from entering the oceans.
Today you have between 4,000 and 5,000 children under the age of 5 that are dying every day because they have no access to clean water or enough water. That can change. We can decide to make it happen.
Mr. Cousteau says a great part of the ocean remains unexplored. He says there are thousands, maybe millions of species we have not yet identified. So, he says, we also have no way of knowing how pollution is affecting them.
My dad used to say, people protect what they love. And I said, if you don't understand, how can you protect it?
Jean-Michel Cousteau launched the Ocean Futures Society in 1999. The nonprofit organization aims to educate people about the importance of ocean life and the dangers it faces. Mr. Cousteau says films like Secret Ocean 3D also help do that. He says he wants his films to be fun and beautiful to see. And he wants them to teach people that there is only one water system on the planet. He says every plant and animal depends on the quality of that water for life. I'm Jonathan Evans.
You are listening to The Voice of America, VOA, and we are coming to you from Washington with the program called As It Is. Have you ever wondered about work and the money people earn in the United States? What are the best jobs? How much do people make? Did you know that men in the United States usually make more money than women, even if their jobs are nearly the same? Well, activists gathered in New York City this week to call attention to a problem that has existed for a long time, the pay difference between American men and women. The United States Congress took steps to fix the problem back in April 1963 when it passed the Equal Pay Act. The law requires U.S. businesses to pay women and men the same wage for equal work. But on average, women today still earn 22% less than men. For women of color, the difference is even greater. African American women earn 36% less. Latinas earn 44% less. Kelly Jean Kelly reports.
The difference in pay costs women nearly $450 billion a year in lost wages. Beverly Neufeld set up a group called Power NY to improve economic fairness. She says the average woman has to work 15 months every year to make what an average white man makes in 12 months. That difference is, in her words, a lot of bread, another word for money. Activists point out economic fairness is not an issue that concerns only women. Martha Camber is head of the Young Women's Christian Association in Brooklyn, New York. She says, if women cannot earn enough money to support their families, the whole community suffers. And in the United States, where single mothers lead one-fourth of all homes, the pay difference has an especially big effect on children. Last January, President Barack Obama asked Congress to pass a law that strengthened economic fairness between women and men. But the federal government has not been successful in that aim. So some state governments are taking action. The New York State Assembly is expected to pass the Equal Pay Bill this year. It will protect employees who discuss their earnings with others. Representative Michelle Titus proposed the bill. She says the protection is important because employers usually bar workers from comparing how much money they make. Robert Cornegie, a New York City Council member, is also urging change. He tells his daughters every day that if they work and study hard, they can achieve anything and be recognized fairly. He says he does not want to tell them a lie. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for joining us today. Let's do it again tomorrow. This is VOA, the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Slowing economic growth around the world is endangering the World Bank's goal of ending extreme poverty by the year 2030. That is what World Bank President Jim Yong Kim said recently. Mr. Kim said the goal remains within reach, but he thinks extreme poverty will disappear only if world leaders and financial and development agencies do their part. What exactly is extreme poverty? The United Nations says extreme poverty is a condition in which basic human needs are not being satisfied or met. These needs include having clean drinking water, food, and an education. Jim Yong Kim says there is good news. He says the world has made some progress toward reaching the goal.
Over 25 years, we've gone from nearly 2 billion people living in extreme poverty to fewer than 1 billion.
Even with this progress, nearly 1 billion people continue to live on less than $1.25 a day. Slowing economic growth in industrial and developing economies is affecting the fight against extreme poverty. Mr. Kim suggests that one solution is to partner with new financial institutions, such as the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank and the New Development Bank.
We at the World Bank Group see these development banks as potentially very strong allies in tackling the enormous challenge of bringing much-needed infrastructure to the developing world.
Banking coalitions could help identify financing for transportation and other infrastructure needs that the World Bank alone cannot provide. Amy Studdert is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C.
There's a huge infrastructure gap in Asia. The World Bank itself estimated, I think, that it was $2.5 trillion worth of investment needs to happen in South Asia and Southeast Asia alone.
Many people are concerned that new lending agencies will reduce the influence of existing ones like the World Bank. But Mr. Kim says the issue is not influence.
The fundamental issue for us is your enemy cannot be other institutions. Your enemy has to be poverty.
The World Bank is expected to consider those issues when world leaders meet at the United Nations later this year. And that's the Economics Report. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. there were many changes in the social customs and day-to-day life of millions of Americans during the administration of President Calvin Coolidge. Many young people began to challenge the traditions of their parents and grandparents. They experimented with new ideas and ways of living. People of all kinds became interested in the new popular culture. Radio and films brought them exciting news of court trials, sports heroes, and wild parties. The 1920s also was one of the most active and important periods for the more serious arts. Writers, painters, and other artists produced some of the greatest work in the nation's history. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe take a look at American arts during this exciting period.
Most Americans approved strongly of the economic growth and improved living conditions during the 1920s. They supported the conservative Republican policies of President Calvin Coolidge, and they had great faith in the country's business leaders and economic system. However, many of the nation's serious artists had a different and darker view of society. They were troubled deeply by the changes they saw. They believed that Americans had become too interested in money and wealth. These artists rejected the new business society, and they also questioned the value of politics. Many of them believed that the First World War in Europe had been a terrible mistake. These artists had little faith in the political leaders who came to power after the war. They felt a need to protest the way the world was changing around them.
The spirit of protest was especially strong in serious American writing during the 1920s. Many of the greatest writers of this period hated the new business culture. One such writer was Sinclair Lewis. He was the first American to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. Lewis wrote about Americans living in the towns and villages in the central part of the United States. Many of the people in his books were foolish men and women with empty values. They chased after money and popularity. In his famous book, Main Street, Lewis joked about and criticized small-town business owners. Social criticism also was central to the writing of the newspaper writer H. L. Mencken from the eastern city of Baltimore. Mencken considered most Americans to be stupid and violent fools. He attacked their values without mercy. Of course, many traditional Americans reacted strongly to such criticism. For example, some religious and business leaders attacked Mencken as a dangerous person whose words were treason against the United States. But many young people thought Mencken was a hero whose only crime was writing the truth.
The work of Lewis, Mencken, and a number of other writers of the 1920s has been forgotten by many Americans as the years have passed. But the period did produce some truly great writing. One of the greatest writers of these years was Ernest Hemingway. Hemingway wrote about love, war, sports, and other subjects. He used short sentences and rough words. His style was sharper and different from traditional American writing, and his strong views about life set him apart from most other Americans. Another major writer was F. Scott Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald wrote especially about rich Americans searching for happiness and new values. His books were filled with people who rejected traditional beliefs. His book, The Great Gatsby, is considered today to be one of the greatest works in the history of American writing. A third great writer of the 1920s was William Faulkner. Faulkner wrote about the special problems and ways of life in the American South. His books explored the emotional tension in a society still suffering from the loss of the Civil War 60 years before. Some of Faulkner's best books were The Sound and the Fury, As I Lay Dying, and Absalom, Absalom. Like Hemingway, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
The 1920s also produced the greatest writer of theater plays in American history, Eugene O'Neill. O'Neill was an Irish-American with a dark and violent view of human nature. His plays used new theatrical methods and ways of presenting ideas, but they carried an emotional power never before seen in the American theater. Some of his best-known plays were Morning Becomes Electra, The Iceman Cometh, and A Long Day's Journey into Night. A number of American writers also produced great poetry during the 1920s. Probably the most famous work was The Wasteland, a poem of sadness by the writer T.S. Eliot.
There also were important changes in American painting during the 1920s. Economic growth gave many Americans the money to buy art for their homes for the first time. 60 new museums opened. Slowly, Americans learned about serious art. Actually, American art had been changing in important ways since the beginning of the century. In 1908, a group of New York artists arranged a historic show. These artists tried to show real life in their paintings. They painted new kinds of subjects. For example, George Bellows painted many emotional and realistic pictures of the sport of boxing. His work and the painting of other realistic artists became known as the Ashcan School of Art. Another important group of modern artists was led by the great photographer Alfred Stieglitz. This group held a major art show in 1913 in New York, Chicago, and Boston. The show presented modern art from Europe. Americans got their first chance to see the work of such painters as Pablo Picasso and Georges Braque. The show caused a huge public debate in the United States. traditional art critics accuse the organizers of the show of trying to overthrow Christianity and American values. Former President Theodore Roosevelt and others denounced the new art as a threat to the country. However, many young American painters and art lovers did not agree. They became very interested in the new art styles from Europe. They studied them closely. Soon, Charles DeMuth, Joseph Stella, and other American painters began to produce excellent art in the new Cubist style. John Marin painted beautiful views of sea coasts in New York and Maine, and such artists as Max Weber and Georgia O'Keeffe painted in styles that seemed to come more from their own imagination than from reality. As with writing, the work of many of these serious modern painters only became popular many years later.
The greatest American designer of buildings during the 1920s was Frank Lloyd Wright. Wright believed that architects should design a building to fit its location, not to copy some ancient style. He used local materials in new ways. Wright invented many imaginative methods to combine useful building design with natural beauty. But again, most Americans did not know of Wright's work. Instead, they turned to local architects with traditional beliefs. These architects generally designed old and safe styles for buildings, for homes, offices, colleges, and other needs.
Writers and artists now look back at the roaring 1920s as an extremely important period that gave birth to many new styles and ideas. Hemingway's style of writing continues to influence American writers. Many painters say the period marked the real birth of modern American art. And architecture students in the United States and other countries now study the buildings of Frank Lloyd Wright. The changes in American society caused many of these artists much sadness and pain in their personal lives. But their expression of protest and rich imagination produced a body of work that has grown in influence with the passing years.
Our program was written by David Jarmel. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.